So Chrysalis draws up a tab of about 165,000, and Ritz, through his ownership of this Chrysalis company, begins to sort of drain assets out of Chrysalis. And so the owners of Husky Electronics bring suit against Ritz individually in Texas state court under the Texas Business and Commerce Code, kind of under a piercing the corporate veil theory. So sure enough, he files for Chapter 7, and we have an adversary proceeding in the bankruptcy court in the Southern District. And so Husky moves under 523A2A, under a theory of actual fraud, and immediately the district court and then the Fifth Circuit say, no, this is not the kind of activity that Congress had in mind when they said actual fraud. This is a fraudulent conveyance, perhaps, but this is not the language that is meant for actual fraud because there is not a misrepresentation. So 523A2A is drafted is false representation or false pretense, and the addition of actual fraud requires the representation. So they're not disjunctive, they're not different. Actual fraud still requires a representation. And they're saying because Ritz never made any representations regarding the transfer of assets out of Chrysalis to other groups, there's no representation involved, no actual fraud, this is a dischargeable debt. Okay, Supreme Court does not buy that. So they do kind of a four-factor analysis, but they start primarily they start with the 1978 amendments. And in the 1978, when we amended the code, we specifically included actual fraud. Before that, it was false representations and it was false pretenses, but we added actual fraud as a separate component in 1978. So the first theory is sort of, we want to give credit and effectuate the plain additions of Congress. They wouldn't have made that unintentionally, and we want to give credence to that. They next kind of reemphasize that when it comes to 523A2A, we draw a lot of our language from common law, right? And so they dip all the way back to the 13th century and Twine's case, which is a case really getting into one of the first cases talking about the badges of fraud. They talk about the fact that fraud includes these types of acts, these types of conveyances. Kind of the third point there, Ritz totally backed himself into a corner. He says actual fraud, the actual language of actual fraud includes fraudulent conveyances. However, 523A2A is drafted, it's a different meaning of actual fraud. We should give no credence to that. We mean something different here. It requires representation. So totally backed himself into a kind of illogical corner. And I think the Supreme Court kind of got him against the ropes on that. So in the end, they kind of say there's no way that they would draft actual fraud to require representation. And in this case, we're going to find actual fraud as it stands. I hear Judge Hale's qualm with it. I don't know that I agree with it. But if you want to defend yourself, you're more than welcome.
No defense. This morning I looked at the dissent by Justice Thomas. I think it's a really good dissent. He's out there by himself, but he says that this really is not, let me see, it's not a debt to the extent obtained by fraud. And I've always thought that he was probably right on that. And so that's how you're wrong, I think.
Very good.
The other thing, well, that's enough, I guess, on that. But you don't have any issues with the case? You think it's decided correctly? Because a lot of judges below thought it was should go the other way.
I like it as it stands. I think I like the procedure of drawing on the common law. I like the procedure of analyzing those cases and saying this is the kind of action that we're talking about. I like it.
Let me just ask out to the judges. When y'all first read the opinion from the Supreme Court, were you a little bit surprised, or was this something you expected, Marvin?
I actually thought it was pretty expected because that opinion was.
I thought it was pretty expected in that I think that they concluded that he was a bad actor with lots of scienter.
Yeah.
And I think that if you focus and say the real purpose of that list is to say somebody that takes money with evil intent, And that's what I thought the focus was. And if you'll recall, when Judge Bohm issued his opinion, he ruled the other way and said, I think the law is wrong here and ought to be reconsidered, which was an interesting way for him to approach it.
I thought it was one of Jeff Bohm's best opinions, to be honest with you. It was a very thoughtful ruling that the person that he thought really should lose didn't lose because he just applied the statute as he saw it.
Yeah, and of course, you know, your disagreement of it, you know, comes from sort of a pushover point of view.
I wondered when my first insult from you was going to occur.
Anybody else?
They all turned me down.
Okay. All right. We're going to then move. Judge Everett is going to do a case that's a Chapter 13 case, but it's a case that's very important. It's dischargeability of student. Oh, pardon me. I'm skipping myself.
Classic.
The Grogan case is a famous case. It's dated a little bit, and you're going to think, well, there's nothing to this case, but there really is. Back when I first started practicing bankruptcy law in the early 80s, and you had a judgment down in state court for fraud or something that might meet the 523 elements, you literally had to take the record from the state court to the bankruptcy court